I'm Nina von Tilburg for BizNews. Well, joining us in the BizNews studio today is André Pienaar, a venture capitalist hailing from South Africa. He's the founder and managing partner of C5 Capital, a firm with a diverse portfolio spanning cybersecurity, space and nuclear power industries. André will soon release his new book, Mandela's Untouchables, The Scorpions and the Fight for Justice in South Africa. We'll delve into the contents of the book, explore his motivations for writing it, and discuss his recent warnings about Jacob Zuma's political comeback with MK, as featured in National Security News. Welcome, André, to BizNews.
Linda, great to be with you.
What motivated you to write this book at this particular time?
Linda, the story of the Scorpions is a really important untold story for South Africa, but also for the world. The Scorpions is a great South African success story. It is an integral part of the history of our democracy in South Africa. It is a tribute to the leadership of the ANC at the time, and also a tribute to how South Africans can work together to accomplish results, to sustain and build South Africa as a successful democracy. It's an example of how South Africa can build successful alliances with other democracies, and it's an inspirational story of great courage and great resilience. It's also highly relevant for the international community today because all democracies are struggling with the question of police reform. How do we get effective law enforcement and policing that's compatible with human rights and that supports social justice and that leads to safer cities and communities for democratic countries. And the Scorpions is a very successful example of police reform. Very uniquely, we innovated law enforcement because in the Scorpions brought together a combination of intelligence officers, detectives, and prosecutors in one unit, which is a very unique combination. But it meant that the Scorpions could take on some very difficult cases and prosecute them very effectively with a very high success rate in his prosecutions because right at the beginning, the prosecutors set the evidential standards and laid out the law for the intelligence officers and the detectives so that there was a plan that from the very beginning was focused on a successful prosecution. And this very close integration between prosecutors, intelligence officers, and law enforcement officials made the Scorpions one of the most successful law enforcement units, not in South Africa and Africa, but worldwide.
And so where did it all go wrong for the Scorpions and South Africa?
Well, often very successful law enforcement units become a victim of their own success. And the Scorpions ended up investigating two very difficult cases simultaneously. One, the corruption of former police commissioner Jackie Celebi, and the other one, the corruption associated with the then Deputy President Jacob Zuma. And prosecuting both those two cases simultaneously was the undoing of the unit. And when President Zuma came into power, he, of course, immediately destroyed the unit. And the way in which he did it was to do an unlawful leak of unlawful wiretaps that were done on the leader of the Scorpions at the time, Lenard McCarthy. And these wiretaps, which were obtained unlawfully, were leaked on a selective basis, so it wasn't the full transcripts. And this enabled the parties who leaked this information to mischaracterize many of the communications that they leaked and to mischaracterize many of the relationships. And I was one of the people who appeared on those wiretaps because I remained as an advisor to the National Prosecuting Authority and to the Scorpions. Former President Zuma tried to characterize me as a CIA officer was, of course, to try and discredit the very valid charges that the Scorpions have brought against him and the very strong and compelling case that the Scorpions built against him for public corruption. And then secondly, of course, to put a marker on me and my family as a form of intimidation and as a form of threat, because in many parts of the world, if you are associated with an organization like the CIA, you're at risk from terrorists, from criminals, from hostile foreign intelligence services. So it was also a way of trying to threaten and intimidate me and to put a marker on me as a target for others. And I'm sure this was done in close cooperation with the people I wrote about in the recent article in National Security News, the Russian Military Intelligence Service, with whom President Zuma has had a long association.
Well, before we get to the actual charges and what you found out about Zuma during the Scorpions investigation, what was the effect of this on your family?
Well, it certainly, having had the privilege of being involved with the creation of the Scorpions and having had the privilege to be part of this very important chapter in the history of South Africa as a new democracy, many, many good things have come out of it. I had the opportunity as a very young man who came from an Afrikaner family who was not part of the liberation movements, but came from a very conservative Afrikaans family. I had an opportunity to work very closely with a number of the very impressive senior ANC leaders that were part of Mandela's government and who were wholeheartedly committed to build South Africa as a very effective democracy that's an integral member of the international community. And that was an enormous privilege, including working with Mandela himself, who was always a great source of encouragement and of inspiration and an unforgettable experience. I had a great privilege of working with some of the best law enforcement leaders and senior intelligence officials in the South African law enforcement and intelligence community. Incredibly brave people who took on this huge challenge to bring law enforcement and intelligence in line with the new South African constitution and as part of a democratic system. Many of them have been persecuted since and have been pushed aside. And I write about one of them, Ivor Powell, in my article in National Security News. Ivor was a journalist who volunteered to join the Scorpions as a crime analyst. And he was part of a team who wrote the Brous-Mill report, which was a very thoughtful, responsible report, evaluating very carefully intelligence which the Scorpions have received unsolicited from different sources and from in South Africa, from agencies in South Africa, government departments in South Africa, but also from other law enforcement services from other democracies. And Ivor was totally persecuted and crushed because he was identified as the author of this report. And he's just one example of many people who really gave their lives, both in the Scorpions, but also in the South African Revenue Services and other law enforcement agencies for this great fight for justice in South Africa. And of course, what happened to Leonard, this attempted assassination of Leonard, in fact, an attempt to kill him and his whole family, was really a precursor to some of the bad things that we've seen happening recently in South Africa, where law enforcement officers like Detective Kinnear and others have been assassinated by organized crime groups. And so I can only pay enormous tribute to all the law enforcement and intelligence officers in South Africa who've been part of this great fight for justice and for the safety of our communities. So those were wonderful things that have come out of the experience of being part of the Scorpions. On the negative side, the fact that the Zuma administration and President Zuma put a marker on me and went after me because of the unlawful wiretap they did on Leonard McCarthy. Of course, that came at a great cost for me, came at a great cost for my family. And these cases have long tails. And so, you know, wherever I now go in the world, around the world, when people Google my name, this will come up and bad people can draw the wrong conclusions from it, and it can pose a physical safety and security risk.
True. Can we look at that article you wrote? Because you talked about the charges against Zuma that were made against Zuma and his link to Russian intelligence and that he was paid by or is still being paid by Russian intelligence. Can we look into that?
Yes, well, so the corruption charges that was brought against President Zuma, of course, related to payments that he received from a French arms manufacturer in the context of the major weapons deal that was negotiated to upgrade and modernize the South African armed forces with the onset of democracy. And that was a case that was very thoroughly investigated by the National Prosecuting Authority and by the Scorpions. And those cases are very serious and very well substantiated and evidence charges. And that's why that prosecution, at least notionally, is still continuing against President Zuma. Although whether there's the political will to see through what's a really important prosecution for South Africa as a democracy remains to be seen. I think the case against Zuma is a really important case because it really shows to South Africans that no one is above the law and that we are all subject to the South African Constitution and we are all subject to the laws of the country and that the rule of law apply. And therefore, the case should be seen through. And President Zuma himself has said he wants his day in court and he now has his day in court. But now it seems he doesn't want his day in court because he's been attacking the prosecutor and the independence of the prosecuting authority. And again, of reference this charge against me as of being a CIA agent in his special plea defense. And so he doesn't seem that he actually wants his day in court. And when the court makes a judgment, it doesn't seem that he accepts that judgment either, because when he was convicted for contempt of court and had to serve a prison sentence, his propaganda infrastructure, which colludes and works very closely with the Russian GRU, tried to create an insurrection in the country. And there was a huge protest that did enormous criminal damage to the country in the run-up to him going to prison. And now, of course, he's no longer in prison, having brokered a deal in Moscow that sees him being released under the pretext that there are too many prisoners in prison at the moment. It will be interesting to see how many people got exempted on those grounds and have been released in similar circumstances to President Zuma. I guarantee you very few, because this was a deal that was especially done for him to keep him out of prison.
Tell us about this deal. Is that between Zuma, Mr. Ramaphosa? Is he in that as well?
Well, the president has to be part of the deal, and this deal was brokered in Moscow whilst both of them were there for President Putin's summit. Something I find highly amusing is that both President Zuma and former Deputy President Mabuza, that both of these characters say that they go to Russia for medical treatment. During the Cold War, this was, of course, one of the old and tired and worn cover stories for going to meet with the Russian intelligence services in Moscow. So this was something that was trotted out as a cover story for when people went to Moscow to meet either with the KGB or with the GRU or as part of some communist conspiracy. No one today go to Russia for medical treatment. No one. Russians leave Russia to get medical treatment. No one wants to be treated by a Russian doctor or by a Russian nurse. It has one of the worst healthcare facilities in the world. In fact, if you were to say to a Russian, particularly to a Russian intelligence officer, that you are going to send your doctor to go and see him, or you want to send a nurse to go and see him, that's a coded message for, I'm going to send someone to assassinate you, in the black humor of the Russian intelligence community. So no one goes to Russia for medical treatment. The only two people who go to Russia for medical treatment is Jacob Zuma and South Africa's former deputy president. And the fact that anyone believes that they're going there for medical treatment is just incredible. So Zuma, of course, went to Zimbabwe to promote this money laundering and sanction evasion scheme, which is paraded as a form of carbon free trading, and from there he was whisked to Moscow for medical treatment, but really to go and meet with his masters. And whilst he was at the summit, this deal was brokered that he would be released from prison, and that he wouldn't have to return to prison, as the court ruled that he should go to prison. And so in defiance of South Africa's rule of law, this unlawful deal was brokered, and he was released under this pretext. unbeknownst to the people who agreed that he would be released, there was a very specific reason why the Kremlin wanted Zuma to be released from prison. And it was because he had an agreement with the GRU that he was going to launch a new political party, which, and as another example of Russian black humor, is called MK. South Africans think it's a reference to Umkhonto we Sizwe, where the armed wing of the ANC. In reality, it's the Russian designation for the subsidiary of a wholly owned Russian company, and it is the Russian abbreviation for the Bolshevik Revolution. And so MK has a double meaning. It has a, we believe it might refer to the armed wing of the ANC, but it means something else completely, something different in Moscow. And so someone is having a chuckle back at the GRU headquarters about all of this. This new political party is the first party in South African democracy that's been started by a foreign intelligence service. And it's a proxy of the GRU, and it's meant to be part of this new architecture that the GRU is building across Africa following the failure of the Wagner Group. And I say the failure of the Wagner Group because ultimately the Wagner Group revolted against the Kremlin and marched against their masters in Moscow.
What exactly is the GRU?
The GRU is the Russian version of military intelligence. And it is one of the oldest and the longest established Russian intelligence agency that forms part of the Russian Armed Forces and the Russian Ministry of Defense. I did my master's thesis in the UK on one of the subdirectors of the KGB, Directorate T of the First Chief Directorate, which is the division of the KGB that's responsible for economic espionage. And my whole life, I've been a student from a counterintelligence point of view of Russian intelligence. And the history of the GRU is one that goes back to the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, which is why I think they chose the designation of MK, which is the Russian abbreviation for the Bolshevik Revolution, for Zuma's party, as a form of black humor. But the GRU is one of the most dangerous and predatory intelligence organizations in the world. They've had a long history of great secrecy, but some of the most famous defectors of the Cold War, like Penkovsky, was perhaps one of the most valuable intelligence agents for the West, has come from the GRU. And most recently, of course, the case of Skripal, who became the target of an assassination attempt by the GRU, is another example of an officer who defected from the GRU. So the GRU have maintained a track record of secrecy that have been breached by these high-profile defectors, and more recently have obtained a higher profile because of these failed assassination attempts, and because they've been caught in a range of cyber hacking operations across Europe, some of it related to them trying to obfuscate evidence about involvement in these assassinations, and some of it meant to meddle into elections, not only in Europe, but also in the US. So, for example, in the 2016 elections, they were one of the agencies who were the most active in meddling in the US elections. In Africa, they become notorious because of their creation, which is called the Wagner Group, which is a Russian military company, which was created by the GRU around the personality of Prigozhin, who was in turn assassinated by the GRU when he no longer became useful in September of last year, in the run-up to when Jacob Zuma was launching his political party in South Africa. After the Wagner Group revolted against its masters and against the Kremlin and marched on the Kremlin, the GRU set out on instructions of Putin to dismantle this organization. And they were very active across Africa last year to visit all the countries where the Wagner Group have built predatory relationships, and have now transformed the remnants of the Wagner Group into something called the Africa Corps, which sounds very familiar to us because that's what the Nazis called their deployment in Africa. Of course, South Africa fought against the Africa Corps, Rommel's Africa Corps. My uncle fought against Rommel's Africa Corps in North Africa during the Second World War. And now we have another version of the Africa Corps being deployed in Africa again as the successor to the Wagner Group, which is under the control of the GRU. So the GRU controls all these private military companies. They control all the major arms deal that Russia is doing. They play a very active role in the sale and the marketing of Russian nuclear technology. And of course, they play a devastatingly destructive role in Russia's war on the Ukraine and have been implicated in some of the worst war crimes and atrocities that have taken place in the Ukraine. And so these are the types of people that Jacob Zuma is associated with and whose influence he's trying to extend in South Africa through his political party, MK.
So are you worried that the GRU might interfere in South Africa's elections?
Without a doubt, they will try and interfere in South African elections. You will recall that the Western Cape legislature was severely hacked about a year ago, and that hack was attributed to come from Russia and was done with by Russian hackers. And that's just one example of how Russia is already meddling in our elections. You will recall that Jacob Zuma's daughter was one of the first people in the world to use the social media handle Stand With Russia, supporting the invasion of the Ukraine and the war crimes that Russia is committing in the Ukraine. And so the GRU is meddling in a number of ways in South African elections. One is they've built this social media infrastructure around the Zuma family, which they leverage for propaganda not only in South Africa and Africa, but globally. Zuma's recorded videos at their behest in which he praises Putin and endorses the invasion of the Ukraine and perpetuate Russian disinformation, like the fact that NATO is responsible for Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. And then secondly, the GRU will be hacking their enemies and people who they see are opposing their operations in Africa and South Africa through their very extensive hacking infrastructure. And I think what happened to the Western Cape legislature is just one example. When Jacob Zuma orchestrated this insurrection in South Africa, at the same time, all our major ports got severely hacked and several of our ports were closed down for several days, disrupting the supply of COVID vaccines to South Africa. That is something that we saw the GRU doing worldwide, attacking hospitals and clinics in different democracies during COVID, also attacking the supply chain for the provision of COVID vaccines all around the world and targeting doctors and nurses and patients in Western democracies. More recently, we've seen other forms of disinformation that have been distributed by the GRU in Africa, including an allegation that the US is doing all kinds of sinister research in Africa, which is completely untrue and goes back to a disinformation operation that was run by Russian intelligence during the Cold War, claiming that AIDS was originated in the Western democracies. So yes, we must expect all manner of malfeasance to try and meddle with our democracy and with our upcoming elections. And South Africans have to be extremely vigilant and very careful and critical in evaluating all the information that they receive, particularly on social media. The chairman of the Ukrainian National Defense and Security Council gave a brilliant interview this week to demonstrate how Russia is now using artificial intelligence to try and meddle in elections in the democracies. And that's another very good example of the kind of threat that Russia now poses to democracies. Democracies and the model of liberal democracy have been tremendously successful. That's why hundreds and millions of people are trying to immigrate to democracies. That's why millions of people are walking to America. That's why people are trying to swim the English Channel to get to Britain. This is why people are crossing the Mediterranean on small boats, because they see how wonderful life can be in a democracy, and they can see how qualitatively better life is in a democracy. And that's why people from all over Africa have walked to South Africa, from the Congo, from as far as field as the Congo, have walked to South Africa, because they want to live in democracies. And that doesn't happen with autocracies. No one is trying to swim to Russia or walk to Russia or to communist China or to Iran. Quite the contrary, people are trying to get out. And there's enormous envy on the part of the autocracies on the success of the democracies. And of course, they fear the values which we stand for, because it will mean the end of their predatory reigns and regimes. And as a result, we should see and expect more of this kind of meddling in our elections as we go forward.
You've also discussed the criminalization of the state under Zuma, which led to this proliferation of mafia-style interests in South Africa. So where can this influence be seen in South Africa today, and what dangers does it pose?
Well, the destruction of the Scorpions meant that South Africa lost the capability to investigate major international organized crime syndicates, and in particular lost the capacity to do white-collar crime and money laundering investigations. Investigating money laundering is probably one of the hardest and most difficult law enforcement investigations to do, and it requires highly skilled forensic accountants. And all of that talent and capacity was lost with the destruction of the Scorpions. So that was one major setback for our democracy. The other major setback was that President Zuma very deliberately removed many of the key controls that the state had on both combating organized crime syndicates, but also specifically dealing with the threat of foreign intelligence services. And so the GIU in particular, the Russian Military Intelligence Directorate in particular, was given free rein in the country to recruit agents, to build networks, to establish themselves, and to establish relationships with South African special forces, with the South African military, with the South African intelligence community. And the relationships that were built with democracies, the very careful, thoughtful, steady relations that were built from a law enforcement and intelligence liaison point of view between South Africa and the democracies that made South Africa a reliable member of the international community were unraveled in a very deliberate and calculated way. And similarly, many of the crime bosses who contributed to Zuma's political campaign and to his political coffers were given free rein. And so we've seen the proliferation of organized crime organizations through all of the procurement channels of the state, for example, and international drug syndicates were given free rein. And all of this at the expense of ordinary South Africans and of the most vulnerable people in our community. And so as a result, when Zuma went out of office, the new National Director of Public Prosecutions, Shamila Batoi and her team, faced an almost insurmountable challenge, which on the one hand meant they had a complete lack of capacity, because all of that capacity was unraveled, and on the other hand faced new and dangerous threats that have embedded themselves in the state. And so we face an enormous challenge to reverse this and to reestablish South Africa as a healthy democracy, and to reestablish South Africa as a country where the rule of law apply, to reestablish South Africa as a country where ordinary South Africans have a healthy relationship with law enforcement, and where there are good relations between law enforcement and local communities, where law enforcement have the trust of ordinary people and communities. One of the important things about the Scorpions, which President Mandela laid down, was he said he wanted the Scorpions to be beloved by the people, but feared by the bad guys. And that's what you want from a law enforcement agency. You want a law enforcement agency to have the support of local communities and the trust of local communities. And all of that has been lost, and we have to rebuild it. We must not underestimate what a great challenge this will be for a new government, for a new democratic government. But it is a challenge which we have to take on, and which the country will have to take on, to become a healthy democracy again.
Well, could the same source of Russian funding that you say is behind Zuma and behind the forming of MK, could it be responsible for the ANC who suddenly went from bankrupt to quite cash flush?
Well, the big challenge which we have in a democracy in South Africa is that there's a lot of illicit political funding. And some of that illicit political funding popped up in President Ramaphosa's sofa. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Most of the parties in parliament declare their political funding very correctly, in a very detailed way, but the ANC does not. And so there's an enormous amount of illicit money going into the ANC's coffers, which is never declared. And of course, the ANC declares the contributions which it receives from United Manganese of Kalahari. And that has caused great controversy. But that's really just the tip of the iceberg. The real money doesn't get declared and does not get disclosed. And this is a really serious issue, because that illicit money comes from all kinds of sources, foreign governments, organized crime syndicates, and all manner of people. And it goes undisclosed and undeclared. And this is really something that needs to be addressed.
Sure. Well, how has the state responded to this perceived threat? And do you think, you talked about Shamila Betoy not having the tools to actually fight crime. So do you think the state is capable of fighting this?
Well, it will require great political will to really fight organized crime. And we must begin with the case against President Zuma. The prosecution against him, which was instituted by President Ramaphosa's government and by the National Prosecuting Authority as part of his government, that case should be seen through. And President Zuma must, as he's requested, have his day in court. And secondly, he must return to prison. The Supreme Court have decided that the basis for his previous release was unlawful. And in line with the court's decision, he must return to prison to serve his sentence. And there begins the rule of law. And that sends the message to everyone that all of us are subject to the rule of law. And so it's really important that the government recommits to the fight against organized crime and recommits to protecting its own citizens. Because the greatest victims of organized crime are not the big corporations, are not the affluent people in the country. It's the ordinary people who have nothing and who get abused and exploited and suffers tremendous violence as part of their daily lives. And this is what we have to address as a matter of great urgency.
Is it possible to revive the Scorpions or Scorpions 2.0?
Scorpions were a hugely successful model for law enforcement and a great success story in police reform. So it's a proven model. And so that model can be reinstated. And the new government, after the elections in May of this year, can reinstate a similar model. Whether it will be exactly like the Scorpions is hard to say. It was a very unique experience at the dawn of democracy when everyone was rallying to help South Africa. The U.S. government took 50 young black graduates and put them through a full training course at the FBI Academy at Quantico. And this group of young graduates were the first foreign attendees of the FBI Academy who were given a full training course like they were FBI officers. Scotland Yard in the United Kingdom did the same thing. And so this was a very unique experience. All of this was in the open. There was nothing clandestine about this. And all of this was approved by President Mandela's government. So that kind of unprecedented cooperation and support that South Africa received at the time, I'm afraid we've lost a lot of that goodwill with other democracies because of the conduct of this government.
Do you expect a backlash from the people who actually put a mark on you originally? Do you expect a backlash from them?
When you get involved in fighting organized crime, when you get involved in counterintelligence and counterespionage, when you operate in this realm, your life is always at risk, and it's permanently at risk. And of course, you not only faced a physical threat of assassination, but you also faced the threat of disinformation. And in my case, there were some people in South Africa who tried to turn the story of the Scorpions on its head by alleging that in some way, because I got wiretapped with Lynette McCarthy, I was complicit in the undoing of the Scorpions. And that's a very good example of disinformation and the kind of disinformation that the Russian GRU are masters of disseminating. So you, one is always at risk, but ultimately it is worth the cost, because you are doing a service to others, and there's no greater reward in life than being of service to others.
So when will your book be released?
My book will be released in August, and this book really tells a really important story that hasn't been told before about a great South African success story and how ordinary South Africans have the ability to do extraordinary things.
Oh, thank you, Andre. Thanks so much for speaking to us.
No. Thank you. That was a great conversation.